dinosauro.
Welcome to Signal South. I am your host, Lisa Calhoun, managing founding partner of Valor Ventures, a first check venture capital firm headquartered in Atlanta and investing in AI across the South. The South is my favorite region, but it's also the fastest growing region, the region with the largest U.S. population and the highest rates of entrepreneurship. And I'm really fortunate today to have one of Valor's entrepreneurs with us from Dallas, Texas. Taylor, thank you so much for joining the program.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited about our conversation.
I am too. So I'm going to let people know just a little bit about what I know about you. And then we're going to walk through Taylor's story. So you're in for a treat. This leader has been recognized by the United Nations as the number one AI in the world relative to their sustainable development goals. Over 7,000 companies applied, and there's Taylor at the UN winning that incredible honor. But that wasn't her first big win. Taylor is one of the fewer than 100 Black women who've raised significant venture capital, and I've got a feeling she's not close to done. When I tell you that she's working in AI, though, you might think, that won't go so well with students. I mean, as we're recording this, students have graduated from colleges across the country. And what really took the headlines was their protest against AI. And so I think that's a great time to just kind of throw the baton at Taylor and say, Taylor, are they right to hate on AI?
No. I think the way we've exposed students to AI gives them a right to say, are we doing this the right way? And I'm proud of them for stepping up and challenging the status quo.
Absolutely. Listen, let's talk a little bit more about you. Tell us a little bit about the company you founded and why you founded it.
Well, Stimuli was founded with the belief that we need to do a better job as a nation and really the world in preparing young people for their future. And, you know, I'm excited that we're leading the charge today in doing that through a video game where students are starting their very own companies, just like I did, and learning how to direct AI by working with AI agents to scale that company in a video game that's browser-based and accessible on any device that accesses the internet.
I love what you're building. And I also love the intelligence and the background you bring to building it. So when did you first get exposed to entrepreneurship?
Well, fun fact, I actually remember when my fifth grade teacher introduced me to entrepreneurship by writing it on the board and asking us, did we know how to pronounce this word and did we know what it was? But my parents were actually entrepreneurs. My dad was a big entrepreneur in the sports licensing game. He was partners with Drew Pearson, the original 88 for the Dallas Cowboys. And he was one of the first people in the world to get licensing from all the major sports leagues and then take really cool logos from sports leagues and like cartoon characters and other things and put them on hats that make them very fashionable. So entrepreneurship was exposed to me from a very young age, but it wasn't until I was in college and I had mentors out in Los Angeles that think differently than a lot of people across the country that told me I really had something and that I should lean in and figure out what problem I was passionate about solving.
So a lot of times people say that athletes make the best entrepreneurs. Tell us a little about your perspective on that, because you certainly haven't experienced one.
Well, growing up, I was the youngest of seven kids to play basketball or football for that matter. And one thing that we were always told as a young person is if Michael Jordan has to practice, you need to practice. So that's one thing, just the idea that nobody is at a level of perfect. Everybody is on an evolving evolution to improve. So there's always room for improvement. It's probably one of the big things. The second thing is just working in teams. What has been very cool to see is bringing together some of the smartest people in the world and then challenge them to think and function like a sports team. And what does that mean? When the coach is on a sideline, he's not calling a timeout and pulling a player off the court to have a one-on-one private conversation with him. It's the opposite. The coach is, you know, typically shouting on the court to the team, trying to help them get better. And then you just have this mentality throughout the team that iron sharpens iron. So you don't have the fear of like, oh, how is this going to be received? You're very vulnerable. You're very open. And so our teams at Stimuli do that. We challenge each other really hard. And I think we make a better product, a better company for that culture that we've built. And I think the last thing with entrepreneurship, or excuse me, athletics in entrepreneurship, is I've won a few state championships in Texas, which is a really big deal if you grow up in Texas. And what is that? How does that reflect? It's like you set a goal that sometimes is years out, sometimes it's months out, but the day-to-day grind of like doing the same thing over and over again with this one thing in mind and like the grit that it takes to just persevere through the valleys and the high points in order to get to that goal is something, again, that I've kind of used as I lead this company at Stimuli.
You know, you make it sound like you have to actually love the work or love the game. Do you think that's true?
Yeah. When I talk to other entrepreneurs or like young entrepreneurs that are just getting into the game, I almost tell them like, if you're not willing to like die for what you're building, and I know that sounds so extreme, but if you're not willing to almost live every aspect of your life in order to make the thing come true, like, should you really even be doing the business? So yeah, I would say love might be the right word, but passionate or there's a few other adjectives that I might be able to think of, but yeah, you absolutely have to want to see.
You know, sometimes I believe things are either built from love or fear. And if you're going to choose one and you can be conscious about it, choosing to build from love is so incredibly generative. And you still might be willing to die, but for love. And that, yeah. I think that makes a huge difference. It's made a big difference for me in the things that I'm really focused on too.
Well, to that point about fear, I would just add that I do have a real fear of people from my community getting left behind. And so I almost wonder if it's a little bit of both that drives me at Stimuli and drives our team, because I have this fear of if I'm not doing it, I haven't seen another company that's out there that's willing to go to the lengths that we're willing to go to really get a product that's helping students and not just about profitability, but the mix of both. Like you can make a sizable impact and a highly profitable company all in one.
Absolutely. It may be one of the only avenues really left in this culture and in a hyper-capitalized culture. Building a business and a culture is, I think, one of the best ways to change the world. Of course, I believe that, but I really do. It's one of the reasons I have a VC. So I'd love for you to share why you're building Stimuli. We're going to get into a little bit of what it does and who it does it for, but I'd like you to share with our audience why you're building it and what was that kernel of passion that you decided to bring into the world?
Sure. So, you know, I've heard Tim Draper describe founders in two pockets. You either have the young, eager, highly optimistic, highly energetic founder, or you have the founder that has been on the road for a long time and is extremely obsessed and is like just on this road. I like to say that I'm probably a combination of both. But my story starts 17 years ago, and it always amazes me now to say 17 years. At one point, it was 10 years or 5
17.
Years.
Well, you look 17. Let's just face it, Taylor.
So, you know, my story started when I was in college at Loyola Marymount, again, playing Division I basketball. And at the time, I had a passion for becoming a reconstructive plastic surgeon. And I know that's very, very specific, but I grew up loving biology. I always knew I wanted to help people, and I watched Grey's Anatomy. And so that intersection gets you somebody that's like, hey, I can change the world through plastic surgery. Anyway, I'm sitting in a chemistry class and I have this aha moment where I'm like, okay, this is math with more symbols to it. It's more complex, but it's math. And I reflected over my own journey where my parents had sent me to some of the most expensive and best private schools Texas had to offer. I had been to some of the best public schools Texas had to offer. And I'm sitting there looking at myself and saying, if this is a problem I'm encountering, what about my cousins who are still in poverty? And then all of a sudden I had this big realization that, you know, this isn't a black or white problem. It's not a rich or poor problem. It's not a male or female problem. It's a problem that across classrooms and across schools in our entire nation, and honestly, I'm going to keep saying globe, that we are sending young people out into the world not prepared to make a living for themselves with the skills that they need in mass to just be able to succeed. And, you know, you can start looking at how that impacts an economy, how that impacts a nation. It impacts everybody, actually. But we're doing a disservice to, you know, our brightest minds. So that's ultimately why I decided to stop everything in that moment 17 years ago and get into the business of how do I leverage technology in order to transform education.
You fell in love with the problem. That's amazing and a beautiful story. And of course, I see firsthand that you are chipping away at that problem every single day with some more bright minds that you've created around you. So once you decided you wanted to solve this, was it instantaneous for you that it was going to be a game?
No, it wasn't. Initially, the problem, I feel like Noah, being from Texas, like part of our background is like we're in the Bible, you know, studying a lot. So for those of you that want to reference Noah, Noah's Ark, where he was going around telling everybody it's going to rain. We need to build this big boat to save ourselves. And everybody's like, what is rain? What are you talking about? It hasn't rained in so many years. So all of that to say that it wasn't a game initially. But what I did know initially is that we needed to have corporate involvement in helping educators understand what are the skills that are needed for the future of work. And then the second big thought I had was we have to leverage consumer-like technology in this space, because it was a clear distinction for me that when you looked out in the real world, you would look at technologies like games or mobile phones or animations at that time, because AI wasn't as big back then. And then you look at a classroom and it's the exact opposite, right? When you think about reading a 1,000-page textbook versus, you know, playing EA sports video games or Fortnite or engaging in social media, they're two different worlds. And that just didn't make sense to me. So from the beginning, I did know.
Since then, that disconnect has only gotten worse. I mean, and I know you know that better than I do, but when you look at where you are coming from, feeling so sensitive about the disconnect, social media, mobile games, and the classroom. And now we've got teachers teaching things that are still in books that are 10 years out of date, able to look on AI and get a masterclass if they want it in what's going on right now. And the disconnect has become catastrophic. I mean, students literally are protesting as we're recording this across the US just because of that chasm. So you really called it, and you called it early. What happened then? How did you, so you wanted corporate input, you wanted real job input into the education that people were getting. Who came around? What did you do?
Well, I lived in LA at the time, and my family wanted me to move back home. I was highly resistant to it, but I ended up moving back home, and I ended up working with the second largest school district in Texas, Dallas Independent School District. And at the time, I built a platform that helped corporations interact with students virtually. It was a Accenture and Microsoft employees that first came onto our platform. And that platform ended up helping scale a program essentially across the state of Texas that allowed exactly that corporate involvement in the classroom. Now, I think what we're getting to is the more exciting part about what Stimuli does, because that's totally the origin and maybe the predecessor of what we do now. But we had built so much trust, and trust is a theme that I'll continue to reinforce as far as like why Stimuli is different. But we had built trust with this very large school district serving 150,000 kids. And when the pandemic happened, the school district was certain they could get Chromebooks and technology into students' hands. But what they realized is just because we could put a device in a student's hands doesn't mean that all of a sudden they're having a transformative educational experience. And so the school district superintendent called me one night and he was like, I want to do something nobody else in the world has done. Can you help us build school in a video game? So it was in 2021 that we launched school in a video game. When people all around the world would go and look up what this word metaverse was, they would find a video of me on stage talking about this educational metaverse that we had built, where students were already on a platform going to school at home virtually, but as avatars interacting with their teachers. It was personalized. It was a lot of things, but that's actually what led us to meeting and you all leading our seed round. But all that to say that we quickly evolved to the game during the pandemic, because we were able to see now even more technology that was in front of kids, and it still was missing the mark on engagement.
Interesting. Well, I definitely want people to be able to follow the story. So still missing the mark on engagement, pandemic ends, and then what happens? I mean, what are you thinking? Where are you going next? What do you feel like is the next layer to unlock for the kids that you want to help?
So at the time, you know, if you can imagine that the pandemic's ended and we built a platform that would help people go to school virtually. And then the big question is, all right, how many people are still going to be going to school virtually? And so two major things happened at that point in time for Stimuli. One, the Gates Foundation found out about the work that we were doing, and they were so intrigued by the fact that we had built a real video game to help students learn and how we built it. Every product we build, we're working alongside our end user in order to iterate and make sure we're really solving the problem that they're facing. And so the Gates Foundation was like, we're going to write a check for $1 million, and we want you to continue doing what you've already been doing, which is working alongside your target population, which was Black, Brown, and low-income learners, and help publish evidence to the field to help the world understand what is it about your game that improves the way kids are motivated, engaged, and persisting through their education. So that happens. And then right around that time, I get an email. And it's I mentioned this story because there's so many emails people get that like you probably ignore. Sometimes like you catch up to like months later. But I get an email, and it's essentially like one of the largest school providers in the nation is looking for a company like yours. Do you want to agree to join like this pitch competition? And so,
and you're like, not another pitch competition.
Right.
You're like, thanks. I'm busy. I have real customers. There's a lot of problems going on. We've got a lot to solve here. I'm not pitching. I have money. Did you see the Gates Foundation just dropped $1 million? I mean, I can imagine your reaction was complex. I mean, am I far off there?
Well, I'm always curious. And so My reaction was like, yeah, I think the first reaction is like, is this a real email or is this something that's like, you know, should be in my spam folder? And so with that curiosity, I took the phone call. And what intrigued me about it was the fact that they were saying the largest school provider and they're a publicly ran company. So automatically I'm like, okay, let me at least learn more from this. And what ended up developing from there is me flying out to Stride Learning, or some of you all know as K-12, in Virginia, and giving a pitch. And the pitch was all around how the future of education looks more like a video game. And It looks more like intersecting career readiness and academics in one, as opposed to treating them as if they're separate subjects. And from that point on, we were supposed to find out like 2 weeks later if we were going to kind of go to the next round of this competition. But the CEO, James Ryu, and Donna Blackman, the CFO, were so intrigued by what we were doing at Stimuli. They pulled me into their office and they essentially said, okay, we're going to give you an opportunity to roll out a pilot with our students. And if you do what you say you're going to do in that pilot, you'll have access to our capital. Because they asked me, like, you sound like you have everything you need. What do you need? And I said, I need access to capital. I don't know if you've looked at the numbers, but not that much funding is flowing into education. Not that much funding is flowing into people that are like me. Like, that's what I need. I have everything.
It's not just teachers that aren't paid well. The whole education environment, you know, absolutely. And so, I mean, of course, I know a little bit how this went, and it's an incredible story. But what ended up happening with Stride, and are you still working with them today?
So what ended up happening with Stride is we are still working with them, but I'll tell you the moment that I believed transitioned us from like, hey, we're just doing this cool pilot to we're going to do more. Yeah. So we implemented this pilot for 3 months and then we had a readout with their CEO. And within the first 5 minutes of the meeting, we are showing Stride their curriculum in our video game environment that at the time looked like Fortnite. And a student who was from rural Georgia, so had a really thick accent, said, yeah. I was playing the game, and I was playing the game for like 3 hours until my mom came in my room and told me to go to bed. And even after she told me that, I continued playing the game for another hour, and then I finally closed it because my mom had told me to go to bed. But if she hadn't, I would have stayed up all night playing it. And so that was a huge moment for us as a company and Stride as well, because the number one problem that the CEO of Stride cares about is driving engagement. And so in that moment, he's like, wow, they've taken our curriculum, put it in a game, and now students are engaged. And so what that's led to...
I've got to interrupt as a former rural Georgia student that the internet is terrible in rural Georgia. So for those who are listening closely, what this also says is that your technology works super well, because otherwise it could never get through the bandwidth. I mean, my mom still lives in Roberta, you know what I'm saying? So I really, it's a current reality problem. I know people don't want to talk about it, but the fact that you're able to reach rural students with the broadband access issues we still have in the rural world, it says a lot about how you've built this to succeed, not theoretically, but in real life with real people.
Yeah, thanks for calling that out. We've seen more of that. Now we like have projects in rural Arkansas, towns under 1,000, right? And so, yeah, that's an important issue that's not talked about enough.
It is an important issue. So the current version of Stimuli, what kind of outcomes are you seeing? I know that I'm always impressed when you've had a very outcomes-based approach since we met. You've always had those numbers very in the forefront of your mind when you're building. You talk like a gamer and you love building games, but the fact is, at your heart, I feel like you're truly an educator. What kind of outcomes are you aiming for? What are you seeing? And what are you excited about?
Yeah, well, I want to go back to one of your questions about like what happened with Stride. So for the audience, Stride became an investor and one of our largest customers based upon the success we had in that initial pilot. And so now to answer your question around outcomes, the outcomes that Stimuli cares about the most is seeing people prosper. And to like double click on that, because that could sound vague and it could sound like, you know, a commercial. What we are seeing is we're seeing identity shifts in young people. And so as an example, our game is now called Founder Tycoon. And in the game, students are starting their own businesses and directing AI agents to scale that business. They're producing financial models, business plans, social media posts, things that even adults are not doing at work today. We are equipping students to do in high school. They're starting their first AI native business. We're creating a pipeline for you at Valor, Lisa.
Entrepreneurship is the greatest path to wealth, and the numbers really prove that out. Like, if you're not someone who can inherit your wealth, go ahead, create it, make it yourself. And that's not only the path I know you're on, that's also the number one path for an American to create new generational wealth in their family. So that's pretty exciting. So prosperity is your number one outcome. What kind of skills under that do you think are important to be teaching the platform or that your customers are guiding you toward?
So the number one skill we're focused on right now is giving humans the ability to direct AI. At one point in time, reading was a prerequisite to learning and doing everything else in the world. But today, being able to direct AI, we believe, is the strongest human skill that needs to be developed. And when you think about why does that matter? Well, we just saw that Meta lay off like 15,000 people. Right? These are people that have degrees that made it to like one of the best companies in the world. And they're being laid off because of how AI is displacing people. And so what we said is we can't predict the future, but we do know if we equipped a young person with the skills to be an entrepreneur, what does that mean? Critical thinking, dealing with ambiguity, being able to put their own authorship and ownership into the world, plus the understanding of the power of these AI tools, then they have a pathway to generate wealth for themselves. And I don't want it to be confused that we're trying to literally take everybody and turn them into the next Mark Zuckerberg, because that's not the reality. Everybody actually doesn't even want that. But what we are trying to say is, if you learn this skill, you will be able to teach yourself how to do everything else you need to in this world. You will be able to learn any skill that you need to then go on and apply that across something that you might need to do personally for your family, to add value, economic value to the company that you're working for, to frankly help our nation continue to stay competitive and innovative.
Absolutely. You know, it's an exciting vision And also, I mean, entrepreneurship, whether or not someone chooses to become an entrepreneur, it's a basket of skills, you know, so you've got your reading, you've got your math, you've got your comprehension, you've got your creativity, you've got your artistry, you've got your human relations skills, sales skills, storytelling, creating bolts and organization, thinking about timelines and supply chain. I mean, as you well know, there's a lot to it, and it's a huge ambition to be able to teach that. I'd love for you to give me a sense of, and in the audience, how it's going. Like, what are you seeing in the platform and the students using it that are really making you feel like, hey, we're on the freaking right track? What should people be expecting?
Sure. So we just launched Founder Tycoon across the state of Arkansas within 13 school districts in the most rural populations that you can think of. I personally went there myself to see what these towns look like. We're talking about towns that have under 1,000 people in them. So when we rolled this out, students were not graded by using our platform. They weren't mandated that they had to. It wasn't a part of like a homework assignment. They were explained initially that, hey, there's this game that you can play at school, and anytime you want to, use it as you will. Based upon that, what we were able to see is that 80% of those students continued engaging in the platform up to day 60, which is a big measurement in games, where most games are seeing like 3% retention at that point in time. And so already with V1 of our game, we were outperforming most mobile games. And if you want to think about, okay, is it a PC game or is it a mobile game? PC games are even less engaged with. So let's just keep it to mobile. The second thing that we were able to see is we did a pre-survey before students were introduced to Founder Tycoon and analyzed the survey after they had been on the platform, and we saw a crossover of 84% of students go from unprepared to prepared for a future with AI.
Wow.
Other shifts that, it's quite remarkable, right? It's a huge number. And then other things that we saw is like the one that we're excited about is that kids invited their friends to play. So about every kid was inviting three of their friends to get on the platform to their duration. And so that leads us to believe that this platform is kind of bigger than some use case at school, but it is something that could take off culturally, where kids are proud to brag to the other friends about the businesses that they're building and then invite their friends to come in and work with them and to have like something that is similar to the things that they're doing on like Fortnite or other platforms like Roblox, but they're excited about what they're able to create. And so there's a lot of other stats that I could talk about that we measured as far as like kids becoming way more curious about AI or now understanding. We had one student say, I was originally going to school to become an ultrasound tech. Now I've shifted my major to business because of me playing this game. And then the last thing that I want to hit on, because I think this might prove like the entire thesis of what I've said here today, is a lot of students are talking about knowledge transfer. So they're saying, I learned how to direct AI on Founder Tycoon. And now when I work in other subjects like writing, math, and science, I am able to use AI as a collaborator. I use AI to create friction for me so I can iterate on my ideas and iterate in what I'm writing. As it's arguing against me, I'm writing points to prove that back. And so a large part of the world is thinking all kids are going to lose their critical thinking skills. They're going to lose their creativity. They're going to use it to cheat. It's possible that that would happen if you just handed a kid an AI tool and said, have at it. But when you put them in context of how AI can be used in order to bring their ideas to life and how it's used in business, it actually flips the entire paradigm where they understand what the tool can be used for, how powerful it is, and they start to use it across other subjects.
You know, it's exactly like the difference between being taught how to write a screenplay, working with a screenplay. Maybe you're working with people who are working the screenplay out in front of you and you're getting real feedback versus just dumb scrolling on TikTok or Instagram and looking at everybody else's story. So if you get into an AI, all of them are pretty much sycophantic and designed to keep you coming back. They're not trying to, unless you prompt them well, help you per se, just keep you engaged and kind of keep you on the teat. So I love it that you've found this gap in knowledge, especially with young people when their frameworks and minds are still very much forming. and said, hey, this is how you work with this tool. It's not bad or good. It's about you. It's how you're doing it, your skills. It's really important and critical stuff. So if a student, I feel like I just have to ask, if a student is not in one of these 13 districts in rural Arkansas, can they still use Founder Tycoon?
We're launching direct to consumer in 2027, so soon they will be able to. But if you're a family and you're hearing this and you're like, I have to get my student on this, go to our website. We have a contact us form. Reach out to us because we can provide early access to this platform. And to that point, I want to bring something else up because right now, as you know, in the business world, everybody's talking about we have an AI that can do this.
Right.
And so one question the audience might be asking is like, okay, well, other people teach AI. Are they teaching it the same way or would you see the same outcome? And what I want to let you all know is that, no, they're not teaching it the same way. A lot of people are still focused on knowledge of AI as opposed to the application of it, right? So like,
you're
what
so
is
right.
a large
it's
language like
prompting
model?
Skills. And that is, I mean, that's important. And if you haven't gotten into some prompting skills, it essentially is critical thinking. So it's not that unusual. But if you're actually able to teach the working with AI, directing it, you know, I like the way you use that language, it's to an outcome. It's not just I can prompt, but it's like, can you get your business off the ground? Can you? I mean, what's an example of a framework that students would encounter in the game?
So we built our game off of Tim Kaine is one of the most famous game designers in the world. And he heavily believes that instead of telling a person they should feel something, you should build an environment where they feel it. And so what our players do is they create their own business and then there's a consequence engine. And what is a consequence engine? Consequence engine means every decision you make has a downstream impact. And same with entrepreneurship, right? Like when you take the opportunity like I did to respond to that email, some major opportunity happened. When you decide that you don't want to respond to that email, maybe you don't even find out that there was a consequence or maybe there is a big consequence. So first thing that students are experiencing in our game that they're not in others is actual consequences of their decisions, which makes it even more engaging because then they're starting to think, okay, if I had done this differently, what would happen? Or they're even able pushed to think about second and third order effects. So that's one thing. The second thing is, well, what can kids create? This is an agent just like you and I use where they're doing complete workflows. They could be managing your social media. They could be managing your finances. They could be helping you pitch in an investor. All of these sorts of things are what our young people are creating. And I just want to say, even though I've been an entrepreneur for 17 years, these students, because of Founder Tycoon, are able to start on my journey way earlier than I was ever exposed to it.
That's amazing. I love the sound. It sounds fun. I mean, it literally does sound fun. One of the things that I'm curious about is what's ahead for you? Well, I want to ask you a couple questions, but so I'm not trying to in any way close down the conversation, but since we're talking about where you are today and it's not publicly available, what are some of the things you can share with us about what's happening in the next year? Here we are speaking in May of 2026. There's a new school year starting in August. You know, we've got new graduates coming a year from now. What are some of the things that milestones people should be looking towards Stimuli for?
Sure. So we're launching in Los Angeles Unified in the fall, and I could not be more excited about that because of my ties to LA, but LAUSD is the second largest school district in the United States. Fun fact about them is their board just was the first school district to implement screen time limitations and mandates, but they made it instructional exception for stimuli. So that shows that people are like wild about what we're teaching. We are helping them create an AI literacy course that Founder Tycoon will be integrated into, again, because school districts everywhere do really care about this, but they need help in figuring out how to teach it. So LAUSD is one of the biggest things. As far as what's next, Stride Online will start to scale up our platform because we've made it to that point that we're ready to serve more students. So you can look forward to, if you're enrolled in a K-12 or Stride Online school and you're in middle school and high school, you'll have access to the platform. And then 2027, I'm so excited about exploring the consumer market for two reasons. One, I haven't been there before, but that's where my heart has been. my heart has been in. I want to make sure that regardless of where you live, regardless of your socioeconomic status, that you have access to something like this that can change the trajectory of your life. So in 2027, us launching direct to consumer is something we're excited about. But the last thing I want to bring up on what's happening in 2027 is our federal government is starting to put more money in the hands of families. And so they're predicting anywhere from $8 billion to $28 billion is going to start to flow into families' hands that previously were just given into institutions or public school districts to let families decide how they want to educate their child. And that money is eligible to be spent on softwares like Stimuli. So the game will be free to play to the consumer with a premium upgrade that anybody can tap into those federal funds or those public dollars in order to spend to put Stimuli and Founder Tycoon in the hands of their students.
That's incredible. And, you know, it makes me think of healthcare savings accounts. You know, there used to be no healthcare savings account, and then some of the capital could be repatriated from your retirement towards your healthcare needs now and in the future to be able to repatriate some of the education budget and give it to the actual learners so that they can use it as they see appropriate. It's exciting that that's coming. And it's exciting that Stimuli is right in the center of that. Yeah. As people are thinking about what you're building and why it's different, you know, there are so many existing educational platforms that people think about. Probably the most typical would be, oh, what about Khan Academy and things like that? Any thoughts for the parent who hasn't really spent a lot of time in the educational software space about how you see that environment and the different things coming at the parent?
Sure. I was on the phone with Cleveland Public Schools this morning and we had an amazing conversation and two unique things came up. I'll start with the one that was most intriguing to me. So he said, you know, everybody's coming to us with, we have an AI tool that does X, Y, and Z, but you're the only person that came to us and said, this platform will help kids become job ready. Mm-hmm. That's not the promise of these other AI tools. These other AI tools are very much focused on, oh, how can this be implemented in the classroom? What are the kids learning? But our promise is less about, it's not exclusive to what are they learning today. It's making sure we prepare them for the future. So that's one big delineation. The second thing, which was a funny question I asked him because when we first started talking to him, he was like, you know, we have a lot of AI tools. I can't say, like, we're looking for more. And I asked him, I said, are they fun? And he was like, they're not. And so I just don't think that we should get out of this world, you know, where we're forcing kids to do things that aren't engaging just because you're supposed to do it, because that's not how the kids work anymore. And so all of that to say, the two things that Stimuli and Founder Tycoon kind of promise a family or promise a young person is they're going to have fun and they're going to become job ready.
When speaking to that fun and job ready, are there ways that administrators, whether they're parents or if they're with the school, can see the engagement of the students or see the skills being developed? Because when I think about entrepreneurship as a framework for multiple skill building, you know, I don't think of it showing up on Blackboard or in some of the educational application layer apps. How does the tracking of the students' progress work out for people who care?
I'm so glad you asked that, because to leave that out is almost leaving the most important part of the conversation out. So everything a student is doing in the game tracks to a learning evidence architecture we have. In plain language, what does that mean? There's not an action that's happening in the game that a parent or an educator can't see what the student is creating. And just the broader point of, one, I basically have spent the first half of this conversation talking about how we train people to direct AI. We can also measure how they're using AI. So we would know for a young person like Noah, when he stepped onto our platform, this is the quality of his prompts and the quality of his outputs and how much of his own individual creativity was put into the things that he created. We're able to track over time how that behavior shifts and how he continues to improve how he's directing AI, what his outcomes look like. And then when you think about that at scale, to know how an entire generation, you know, thinks and how they're progressing with AI is just something that's infinitely powerful. But all that to come back to your point, school districts run on standards. They would need to be able to publish to the state that we are teaching the kids these things, because we know that's how school districts
get their
work.
Funding. Whether exactly. It's getting less or more, they're not funded if they don't do that.
Yeah. Exactly. And so we understand that about school districts. So that's the exact type of data that we're able to provide for them. And then the last cool thing is we came up with a framework called SALSA. And SALSA stands for Stimuli AI Literacy State Standards Augmentation, because again, a lot of what people are measuring on how kids are learning AI are not about how they're practically using AI. So we expanded a lot of the frameworks that you see published by the Department of Labor by state leaders on what it means to be AI literate.
You're putting the real spice into the situation. None of this filler. So yeah. I love it. And since, you know, I get a little Texas flavor in that as well. It's yep. super fun. I mean, LA too. So as we're wrapping this up, because I know you're super busy, but I know the audience is really thinking, oh my goodness, I wonder if my school, how could they, would you even want them to introduce you to their school? What type of introduction makes sense? What types of introductions make sense for you in the year ahead, period? Please let us know.
I would say that there's three things that you can do if you think this is a really cool idea and you're like, how can I help? One is if you are a family in a local school district that does not have Stimuli or Founder Tycoon, contact us. Go to our website, stimuli.ai, and you can contact us and let us know, hey, I'm a parent. I'm living in Florida. I go to Miami-Dade schools, and my school district needs this. We will work alongside you to make sure that the educators and the leaders at your school are aware of what we do. So that's the first one. If you want this product in your local school district, contact us. Second, if you're a family and you're like, I don't care if it goes to my school district, I need my child to have it. I want you to do the same thing. Go to stimuli.ai, fill out our contact form, and we will make sure that you get access to our early access release or the consumer release when it comes out. And maybe I'll add two more ask in there just because everybody has a different yeah. network. Some people don't have kids.
Yeah. And Taylor, you're being way too modest because you're like, if you think it's a cool idea, which of course it is a cool idea, but this thing, its time has come. I mean, you're in the second largest school district in the country. Your first customer was Dallas ISD. You're working with Stride. I mean, you are so humble, but I just have to like go, wait a second. This is not an idea. This is a fast growing company. I mean, today was also, you know, you're talking to Cleveland Public Schools. I was talking with Valor's LP Base. Our quarterly meeting was today. And top of the charts on year over year revenue growth, and don't worry, I'm not going to mention any numbers. I know it's private. Stimuli, year over year revenue, very, very high up there and only going north from here. So I just have to say, it's not an idea.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got this plane in the air.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I appreciate you saying that. We are humble, right? Like my highest aspirations of kids all over the world having access to this. And for me, I'm like, until we're there, I'm like, we're still climbing it and growing. But you're right. This is a real product being used by real students and scaling to even more. So as far as the last two introductions, we're raising money right now. So if you know VC funds or private family offices that might be interested in supporting these efforts and both creating impact and making a lot of profit, contact us. And then the last thing is we're increasingly making more employers aware of what students are learning in this platform. And so if you're at an organization that has a focus on AI and they're trying to figure it out, what we would love to do is show your employer what we're doing so they know when students come to them and they start talking about the certification that they earned by going through Founder Tycoon, that employer knows exactly what that means and that young person is ready for a job.
You know, I love that. And it gives me shivers a little bit because it brings me back to diligence a couple of years ago when we were going through your seed round. And I got the opportunity to talk to students that because of your PTEC program with Dallas ISD, found jobs with Texas Instruments, American Airlines. I mean, you've been honing your approach to making sure people really are good job ready. I don't mean job ready, but good job ready. Yeah. So when you say that, I also feel the humility in it. And I want the audience to understand that Taylor's standard on what kinds of jobs she wants her students to take are the kind you can build a family on. And yes, so that really, that's good to hear. So when it comes to an employer introduction, is there a role that typically appreciates that kind of see-through access to AI directing young people? What type of role usually is interesting?
Yeah, it could be human resources departments, or it really could just be a passionate executive that's even trying to figure out how to upskill their own workforce. I mean, that's actually been one of the most ironic things about conversations we've had recently. We were talking to the National Governors Association about what we were doing because, of course, governors are trying to figure out how to support the next generation. And they were like, wait a minute, can we use this for people who are at risk of job displacement? And I'm like, we can. We can actually
like
bring
our
on
people, like our state employees, people.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly what they're focused on.
Well, fascinating. So I will make sure in the show notes that they have the link to the URL. If they didn't hear it or you're listening to this driving, do not worry. It's going to be right there for you in the notes. Taylor, how are you managing all this? This is really my last question. It's very much to you as a human being and leader that you are. You've got so much going on, literally with customers from like $3 billion Stride in Virginia to the second largest school system in LA. How do you create priority? What are some of the touch points of your own personal peace?
Sure. Well, you know, I was looking to like listening to one of those Instagram videos, and it was like some famous CEO that was like, if you're going to be a founder, you might as well develop a company and work alongside people you want to work with. I would first start to say that I am so thankful for the team I have. One, they're some of the most talented people in the world. But two, every challenge we encounter, I have somebody that's running through those walls with me. I'm not doing this alone. I just happen to be the person talking to you all today. And then as far as like the other things, this year I've come to accept that like I have built my life around this. I have dedicated to say like I am so passionate about seeing that this comes out in the world and makes the impact that it has. That what does that mean to build your life around it? Like, I'm working out every day with a trainer at 7:30 a.m. and I have a tight schedule on between walking my dog, getting to the trainer, having breakfast before I'm sitting down with my team. But I give myself that time before I do anything else. And then as far as what I do in my free time, I love sports. You know, I'm in Dallas. The Dallas Wings just drafted some amazing talent from UConn. So I go to those games as often as I can. And then other than that, you know, there's not much other than that. I work on, I don't know if you've heard this, Lisa, but have you heard of like the 13th month?
No, I haven't. Tell me about it.
So if you work on Saturdays, by the time you get to the end of the year, there's a 13th month you created.
What do you mean if?
Exactly. Some people don't though. I've heard entrepreneurs be like, I make to block off my weekends. And I'm like, what, how do you do that? But I hope that answers your question. I'm taking care
that
of myself.
That does answer
mentally
my
and
question. And I think I've got months 13, and most years I'm working on 14.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
But, you know, as people hear that, I'm not trying to valorize that. I'm just, I do love what I do. Mm-hmm. It's not everything that I am. I also pursue sport and dressage and things like that. So I make time for that. Like you're making time for your workouts. I made time early this morning at sunrise to ride my horse. And always so awesome. So I make time, but because I make those times, I also need and want to stay in touch with the other important commitments, responsibilities. I mean, when you're trying to change the world, it's an opportunity. It's a privilege. It really is
a
calling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for making time for this conversation, Taylor. I'm so excited about what you're building. I feel like you have overachieved at every milestone that's come your way, and it's amazing to watch your smoke.
Thanks so much, Lisa.
Take care.
All right. Bye.
The Valor Ventures podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. The views expressed are those of the individual hosts and guests and are not the views of Valor Ventures or its affiliates. Valor and its principals may hold positions in the securities of companies discussed. This podcast is not an offer to sell or a solicitation to buy any security or investment product. You should consult your own advisors before making any investment decision.